The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Yesterday's murder of Jews celebrating Yom Kippur at a synagogue in Manchester by a vile man of Syrian descent has been rightly condemned by many Brits as the inevitable culmination of months, in fact 2 years, of desperately weak leadership by Britain's Labour Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Almost every weekend, large pro-Palestinian marches, frequently involving calls such as death to the IDF and all Zionists are terrorists, have fueled the hatred and incited this sort of violence.
Earlier today, on Yom Kippur, the holiest day for the Jewish community, a vile individual committed a terrorist attack that attacked Jews because they are Jews. And attacked Britain because of our values. So many Jewish families first came to this country as a place of refuge, fleeing the greatest evil ever inflicted on a people. And Britain welcomed them. Communities like the one attacked in Manchester provided safety, but also the security that comes from a promise that this is a country that stands up to hatred. And that we don't just provide refuge, we provide a home. For so many Jewish families, that is the story of Britain. But Britain is also a country where Jewish buildings, synagogues, even schools require round-the-clock protection, where dedicated specialist security is necessary because of the daily threat of anti-Semitic hatred. Today's horrific incident shows why. And while this is not a new hate, this is something Jews have always lived with, we must be clear, it is a hatred that is rising once again.
Prime Minister Starmer there saying that the UK stands up to hatred. Well, it hasn't done a very good job of it, allowing all of this hatred to just take to the streets. In support of Hamas, in support of a Palestinian state, as this man supports. The BBC came out today and said, we don't really know the motive for the attack. This is a quote. We don't know if this was religiously motivated or a right-wing neo-Nazi attack. They've got to throw in, it could be a right-winger. It could be a right-wing neo-Nazi. The guy's name, the perpetrator, literally, is Jihad. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. There's so much to work in because the news cycle really ramps up at this time of year. We've been making the contrast or showing the contrast between this violent, evil world that we live in together with the peaceful utopia that God is about to build on this earth. Thank God for his family government, for God's holy laws. That's what this world needs. Just the fact that you go to the UK of all places and a synagogue, it looks more like a prison because they've got to put up fences, barbed wire, all those kinds of things just to protect Jews. And Jews make up like 0.4% of the population. How much longer before all the Jews in the UK leave the UK because they fear for their lives? Here comes this jihadist ramming his car into a crowd of Jews, and he gets out with his knife and he starts stabbing as many people as he can. We wrote about it at the Trumpet Brief or the Morning Brief. Two Jews are dead. Four have life-threatening wounds. So it could be more than just two. And here we are coming up to the second anniversary of the October 7 massacre. And so many prominent and loud voices in our nations, Western nations, all but cheering on Hamas. And then we wonder why this happens. The incitement to violence, Jew hatred, it's all over the place. The spirit of murder is in the air. I think this was Richard Palmer earlier today. The danger has become even more blatant after October 7. Pro-Hamas demonstrations regularly shut down London's streets. Demonstrators wave the flags of Hezbollah and Hamas. Can you believe this? That they can get away with this? You try criticizing a Muslim in the UK and see how long it takes before the authorities show up at your front door. But on the other hand, they can wave Hamas flags, Hezbollah flags. Yeah, that's no problem. Globalize the Intifada and from the river to the sea are common refrains, both calls to murder Jews. I mean, think about this. You can get away with calling for Jews to be murdered if you're living in the UK, if you're living in Britain. Yeah, you can get away with it. It's no problem. We played the clip not that long ago. Death to the IDF. Everyone in Israel serves in the IDF, for the most part. So that singer could have well said, death to Jews. Kill the Jews. A lot of people do say it. Yet police do nothing and instead arrest those who insult or criticize those groups. Near one protest, police threatened to arrest a man for being openly Jewish. Police! This is the UK today. Over the weekend, I read these promises that God made to Ephraim and Manasseh and the blessing. I think it's in Genesis 48. Manasseh would be the single greatest superpower in history, and Ephraim would be even greater. The British Empire, it encircled the globe. It was everywhere. So much power, and they brought so much civility to the streets of these barbarian regions, if we're honest. Education, government, all of that is gone. All of that is proof positive of who we are because God gave us the blessings. And now he's taking them away. In Britain's case, I mean, so many of them are already gone. Long gone. And the United States, I mean, following World War II, was able to carry on as the world policeman, in a sense. A relatively smooth transition from the awesome power of the British Empire and the American superpower. And yet look at where we are today. Britain's Labour government has amplified lies being spread at these events, that Israel is genocidal, that it's deliberately causing a famine in Gaza, and that Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal. These are all things that you just routinely hear within the British Labour circles. And they're running the government. And now here's Starmer coming out saying that the UK stands up to hatred. Oh, okay, got it. Melanie Phillips, she was observing the Day of Atonement or Yom Kippur in Israel and felt it important enough to post a video, and then she's written on this already. It says, for the past 2 years, it's been open season on Jews in Britain. An already very dangerous and unpleasant atmosphere has been whipped up into rampant Jew hatred and an absolutely toxic atmosphere. Who's responsible for this? And why does the British government allow it to happen and even encourage it? This hysteria, which has infected so many people, who are apparently quite normal, decent people, this hysteria about Israel based on absolute lies and incitement isn't normal. It's a sick pathology to which Starmer and his Labor government have been totally silent. I think in some cases it's been openly supportive of it. Certainly in subtle ways, for sure. But why the silence? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, I guess. Why silence over open Jew hatred? It says here, the Syrian heritage anti-Semite who attacked the Manchester synagogue is the person who's responsible for the carnage he wrought there. But Britain's political and cultural leaders have this blood on their hands, too. Yeah, that's the truth. And there's only going to be a few voices with the courage to tell you the truth, like Melanie Phillips. They've got blood on their hands. Another attack on Yom Kippur at a synagogue in Britain. The global quotes one of our articles. But, you know, another thing about this, as the morning brief brings out, is Sam Livingston, as he was subbing in yesterday on the show, a pre-recorded show, he talked about the God of this world and how that this world is certainly not the true gods. It's Satan's world. And we see evidence of that every day. This is Fox News on the violence in Portland. And here again, the residents want help from the government, the federal government. They want law enforcement. They've lost their city in so many ways. And so Donald Trump sends in some help. And of course, the authorities, the labor-like government in Portland says, no, thank you. We don't need it. We don't mind violence and drug addictions just walking the streets of Portland all over the place. This is clip 3.
All right, at least 3 people arrested overnight after an anti-ICE protest swarmed an ICE facility. And now immigration officials are calling out local politicians for not taking a stand against this chaos. The city's ICE director telling Fox exclusively about the danger Portland is facing.
There have been folks that have been assaulted right down here on the street, even across the street, and it takes Portland police a while to respond, or sometimes they don't respond at all.
It is frustrating.
It's frustrating for us to watch people be attacked on the street and know that we don't have the authority to be able to really step in unless there's some nexus to federal law. Mm-hmm. That's frustrating for us.
Well, I would say frustrating is putting it nicely. They can't even do their jobs because politicians in fancy suits are there rushing to the defense of the criminals, the ones that stir up the hatred. Here's clip 4.
These protests in Portland have been going on for over 100 days now, and you just heard it. Apparently, you know, they turn violent often, but police don't get involved because of local politics. And this sounds like an absolute recipe for disaster.
Make a chain. The land is full of bloody crimes. We've been reading that verse from Ezekiel 7 frequently on this show the last many weeks. And we're seeing it all over the world. And in our nations in particular, where the respect for law and order, in the case of Britain, just inviting in the Muslim world and then basically letting them start their own Muslim community with Muslim laws and rules, letting them govern themselves, letting them take to the streets, waving their Hamas flags, no problem. This is how you commit suicide as a nation, by allowing this to go on. This is clip 5.
The taxpayers are paying overtime for all these cops to be out there. But if they're not doing their job because these mayors and, you know, in these different cities and the city councils are directing them to stand by, I got news for Portland. The National Guard is coming. The Secretary of War, the President of the United States are not going to tolerate it, so get ready.
Yeah, the National Guard is coming. They're apparently training right now, but help appears to be on the way. But in the meantime, Derek, the director of Portland's ICE office, the woman that you just heard from, she says that her employees are getting doxxed. They're getting followed to their houses. And she says that sometimes a crowd of 50 people in about 30 minutes can turn into 1,000. There's about 20 people in that facility. And she's worried that these protesters are going to take the whole facility over. And then you have the mayor and local politicians there not stepping in and doing anything to stop this. I mean, have you ever seen a situation like this?
Jesse Waters last night, he had some clips from just normal residents from Portland that are just outraged by this lack of law and order. This is clip 11.
Locals are frustrated, too. They just want their city back.
They're ruining the whole community. School got shut down. Just built. People are afraid to come out of their houses here. I want the beds here. I want the tanks. I'm just sick of it, man.
So you want the feds to come through here and get rid of all these protests?
Hell yes. Yeah. How are we going to have my community back? Half the people who live here are afraid to come outside.
He wants his community back. He wants the feds to come in with tanks. That's how bad it is. It's a shame. I mean, I was there a couple years ago. Couldn't believe all the homeless encampments. Just right on the highway, right outside the department store or whatever. Just anywhere there's a little patch of grass. They've taken over. Lawless, drug addicted, in some cases violent criminals. He wants his community back. And he speaks for a lot of people in the community. Make a chain. The land is just full of bloody crimes. The earth is filled with violence, as it was before the flood. It's all over the place. Before the Day of Atonement, we had the show talking about, you know, the President Trump celebrating the deal on Monday. But, you know, we had to wait and see if Hamas would agree to it. And now it looks like that's not going to happen. Surprise, surprise. And again, this is the terrorist organization that so many people in America and in Britain loudly support and encourage. This is clip 6.
All right, President Trump's 20-point peace plan in Gaza now in the hands of Hamas. The terror group's expected to reach a decision in the next couple of days. But a Hamas official tells the BBC that the group will likely reject the offer, claiming the plan only serves Israel's interests.
As for what Hamas will do, I know there's a lot of optimism that the devil's in the details on these things. And not only do they have to say yes, they then have to implement it. They have to live with it. And to think that Hamas will self-disarm seems to me to be a bit of a stretch. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that they will see that this is a terrible decision to reject this. To see these terrorists turn over their weapons and hand over these hostages would be a truly remarkable diplomatic achievement.
Is there room to negotiate with Hamas? Or is this
not much. You know, with Hamas, we want very simple. We want the hostages back immediately, and we want some good behavior. And, pretty simple. You don't get simpler.
No, if this deal gets done and implemented, it's a massively good outcome. By the way, the Israelis are giving up a lot as well. They're going to withdraw from Gaza, where they have been continuing to push and are, even as we sit here and speak, continuing to push. They're also going to release a bunch of Palestinian prisoners, people who've committed terror acts against Israelis. That's a hard pill for the Israelis to swallow. So there's compromise everywhere.
And we're just waiting on Hamas to compromise. To, as the president said there, we'd like to see a little bit of good behavior from Hamas. We'll have more to report on this, I'm sure, as we head into next week. Melanie Phillips had some strong comments, and it reminded me of the interview that we had with her over the summer in Jerusalem. You can go, I forget the exact date for that, but you can scroll through Rumble to get back to that fascinating discussion that I think stretched over two programs. But in any event, this is more recent, and she's talking here about President Trump's administration and their efforts to make peace in this world, the Middle East, to make peace with Hamas and organizations like this. It's clip seven.
Trump, I think, has genuinely the warmest possible feelings for Israel, and its welfare, I think, is dear to his heart. But he's also a transactionalist, as we know. He believes that everything is a deal, a potential deal, and if he's controlling the deal, he can get the best deal. And he also seems to think that he can produce peace in the world. And I think this is a bit dangerous and unrealistic.
As I said, a discussion that we had just a few months ago, he talks, or she talks here, about what President Trump did first on coming into office earlier this year, clip eight.
Now, the first thing he did wasn't good at all, in my view, which was the ceasefire deal that he imposed through his emissary, Mr. Witkoff, upon Netanyahu. He proposed it by threats. The threats were, you know, with withdrawal of support for other stuff that Netanyahu finds very important.
Putting the pressure on Bibi. Of course, my father had that very strong article from earlier this year. I forget which issue of the Trumpet it was in, about the betrayal, betraying Israel. Now, President Trump has had some productive meetings, I think, in the view of him and also Bibi Netanyahu since. But still, how do you get good behavior out of a group that wants to kill Jews? You know, where do you find the willingness to compromise on both sides? I mean, as you just heard there from Pompeo, I mean, Israel's agreed to let all kinds of terrorists out of prison, hundreds of them serving life sentences, just to get the hostages back. And then to agree to stop the operation, the counteroffensive in Gaza. But for Hamas, it just doesn't seem like it's good enough for them, judging by these initial reports. Here's one more from Melanie Phillips, clip nine.
I presume nothing. I've seen enough American perfidy never to trust any American president. And you have Mr. Trump, who is very, very sympathetic and had a hard line on Iran, sure. But he believes that, A, he can do a deal, and I suspect he thinks he can do a deal with Iran. And B, he has said many times he wants to be the president who makes peace, who brings peace. He will not have war on his patch. Now, you know, I think this is unrealistic to think you can make a deal with this particular Iranian regime. So that gives me pause. So I don't know. I would not predict that he would step up to the plate in the way that is actually necessary. But to go back to the ceasefire deal, this is a terrible, terrible situation that Israel is in. It's an impossible situation because Hamas has been decimated in Gaza. We're led to believe there are just two battalions left, okay? But they have the Trump hand. I've used that word ill-advisedly. They have the whip hand. Because they have the hostages, and they can't. The Israelis can't get at them. I think some of these hostages, the Israelis have known where they are for quite some time, but can't get at them because they know that the situation in the tunnels, or wherever they are, is such that if they come anywhere near them, the hostages will be killed. Because the hostages were taken for one purpose only, to stop Israel winning the war. And the idea that, you know, Hamas will say at any point, oh, yeah, OK, fine, the game's up. Yeah, I can see. Well, we fought a good fight, but now, OK, we're just going to sort of have to sort of cut our losses and so have the hostages back. Absolutely unrealistic. They will kill them. I fear they will kill them anyway, if any of them is still alive. I mean, we don't know how many are still alive. And they're dying. We can see from the condition of the three hostages that were who were released a few days ago, I mean, just recently, they were being starved to death. So this is a terrible situation because Israel can't move and it has to get them back. But how is it going to get them back? If Israel goes to war again, they may well be killed.
It's quite a position to be in, Israel, with all this firepower, but they're going up against the world opinion, Starmer's Labour Party in the UK, all the university campuses here in the United States. This propaganda, this steady stream of, not stream, flood of propaganda that Israel's committing genocide. And the hostages, as she says there, Hamas is holding on to them to make sure that Israel surrenders eventually. It's the key to their survival. It's unrealistic, as she pointed out, to think that Hamas is capable of good behavior. We have a booklet, by the way, Overcoming Satan. We don't refer to this as often as we should, but it goes through that section in Ezekiel 28 about Lucifer and his rebellion against God and taking a third of the angels with him. Revelation 12 indicates. It says about Satan, Ezekiel 28 and verse 19, "You shall be a terror, and never shall you be any more." And my father says here, God will put a stop to it, but Satan is a terror to this world. He is a terrorist, the supreme terrorist on earth. And he rules over all terrorists. How many people understand that? He's really the one behind all the violence and the terrorism and the evil in our world today. How do you stop this? Well, we've got to confront the devil. We've got to confront evil. And we've got to draw near to God. It's laid out there in James 4. Draw near to God. Resist the devil. And then he'll flee from you. But see, we're really not doing either. The drawing near to God or resisting against the devil and his influence. Can the United States win its war against terror without God on our side? It says, no, we cannot. Satan is too strong and powerful. He's just too strong and powerful. Now, as many of us were reminded yesterday, while observing the Day of Atonement, God is much stronger than the devil. The devil's no match for God. That's why we need God on our side, because without God, we are no match for the devil. We need strength and power from God. We need God to show us the way to peace. We need to learn that way. I mentioned the other day that passage in Ezekiel 36, where it's a millennial passage where God says he's going to give man a new heart, a godly heart. And of course, Satan is going to be put away for 1,000 years. I mean, all of this is in the Bible. It's in Revelation 20. Read it. Read these millennial passages. Learn and understand how God is going to create a peaceful utopia underneath the direction and the rule of his family government. It's coming, righteous rule. It's unrealistic to think that a terrorist group that vows, that has it in its charter to kill Jewish people, it's unrealistic to think that they're capable of good behavior, that they'll suddenly release the hostages as a gesture of goodwill, so that they can just behave pretty good. There's a wickedness inside the human heart, thanks to the devil's influence, Ephesians 2:2. But that will soon change. This is from that same book. Those who respond to this calling now, before Christ returns, are the first fruits. God is going to use them as his bride to rule with him in the world tomorrow from his headquarters and open up salvation to all mankind. They will have a remarkable, amazing reward for what they do today to get this message out to the world. They will help Christ lead his entire family to rule over the earth and then all the universe. My father writes, we get to bring liberty, real freedom to the entire universe. No more suffering, no more pain, no more Star Wars. There are spiritual wars going on at the moment, but that's about to end. He says, what could be more wonderful and exciting? What a wonderful calling God's people have, where we can actually bring peace to this earth and teach people all over the earth how to live, how to go the way to peace, how to draw near to their Creator God. And then, of course, the devil won't be around. I mean, we'll still need education and encouragement to go forward, to go after God. But what a different world we're about to experience when the devil and his broadcasting won't be around any longer. When we come back, we've got quite a bit more to get to. Probably not enough time to get to all of it, but we'll see how much we can get through. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
So we played sound from Vice President Vance, not just defending that AI racist video of Minority Leader Jeffries wearing a sombrero, but also like celebrating that video. And it was playing on a loop in the briefing room today.
It just kind of gives you a window, John, into how they're dealing with this and how they believe they have the upper hand when it comes to the messaging here. And they're being heavily criticized over this, over these posts by the president, by Democrats. And instead of backing off or apologizing for it, they're leaning into it, and they're playing the music over loudspeakers and on repeat inside the briefing room because they simply don't care about that criticism.
And the president himself tweeting out AI videos of fake news reports on healthcare. This is really dangerous, and it's really hard. And I cannot express to you the concern and the absolute bafflement and fear of our European allies asking me, is this stuff really going on? So, yeah, I have a feel that they do that.
What more can Democrats do to explain to the American people exactly what this is about and exactly what Democrats are doing to try and solve the problem that they say Republicans are putting on the table?
Well, Republicans are lying, of course, because they're losing. And that's the reality of the situation. When Republicans are talking about the notion that Democrats somehow are interested in providing health insurance to undocumented immigrants, we know the law prohibits that. It's part of, you know, the Republican disinformation machine, and the American people are not going to buy it.
They want to give taxpayer-funded benefits to illegal aliens again. We cut all that out because it doesn't follow our law, and it doesn't follow common sense.
Mr. Speaker,
and no, it is. Look at page 57, section 2141 of the bill that Chuck Schumer filed.
I had a hankering feeling you were going to bring that up, and I actually did look at it, and we can't get into it, obviously, here on the show. But that last statement was a bit misleading, this idea that they want
they want to repeal and reverse the reforms that we made, and that would add $200 billion taxpayer funds to illegal aliens. Go to my website, speaker.gov, you can see it for yourself.
How they characterize it is you want to give health insurance to undocumented immigrants. I understand that's not really an accurate depiction, but what it does do is
it's a lie.
A lot of you have been talking tonight about these government health care plans that you've proposed in one form or another. This is a show of hands question, and hold them up for a moment so people can see. Raise your hand if your government plan would provide coverage for undocumented immigrants.
I think they all raised their hand. That's from the Democrat debate. I assume it's in the lead up to 2020. They all want to have health insurance for undocumented immigrants. The ladies said it there specifically. And here they are today lying. And they're saying that the Trump people are lying. This is, I mean, Schumer and Jeffries own this, the shutdown. And here's Trump just mocking them with these memes that supposedly Europe is terrified about. I mean, Europe is, they're afraid of the memes. I was telling the crew earlier today, has it ever been this easy to make fun of and mock Democrats? I mean, I'm old enough to remember where you couldn't say anything to even criticize them. I mean, this is a party that had total control from 2009 all the way through to last year. I mean, you have the Trump years in the first term, obviously. But look at how he was harassed and persecuted and impeached and attacked and investigated and spied on. 16 years. And now you have Americans, and you see it all over social media. They're ridiculing and mocking the entire Democrat Party. And I just say this, I point it out to again endorse America Under Attack, because we told you that there would be a complete reversal and that eventually Obama himself would be silenced. He tweets out a picture of him and his wife, and you just scroll through the comments and you see people mocking them. It's not 100%, but as I say, they come out and say that meme was racist. And then what happens? Well, there's like 1,000 more memes that are taking it even farther. And we're not endorsing that necessarily, but it is pretty remarkable to see how the pendulum has definitely shifted. No doubt about it. And the Trump people, they know they have the upper hand here. And furthermore, because of this shutdown, it's actually empowering Donald Trump and the Oval Office more. This is from Axios. President Trump is seizing on the government shutdown as an unprecedented opportunity to consolidate control in the Oval Office, accelerating a trend toward unchecked power. Of course, you know the angle that it's coming from here. It's Axios, after all. But it is true. It's just giving him more power. He's looking at these agencies now and saying, you know, which ones can we fire while everything's shut down? We got to do it. Many Democrats see the shutdown as a necessary evil to halt or at least slow Trump's steamrolling of democratic norms and independent institutions. So far, the standoff is only emboldening the White House. It's emboldening President Trump and his team. As you heard there, they played the meme on a loop inside the press gallery. And the press, they rush to their platforms and say, oh, it's so insensitive, it's vulgar. These people have promoted more vulgarity and filth for years and years and years. And suddenly they're deeply offended by a joke. By a joke. That tells you quite a lot about how the tables have definitely turned. Trump said he met Thursday with White House Budget Chief Russ Vogt to discuss what Democrat agencies should get cuts, casting the shutdown as a chance to shrink a federal workforce Trump has long viewed as hostile. Can you imagine? You talk about Jeroboam being empowered. We wrote last year and at the start of this year, he's coming back in a stronger position. It's not even that he's just coming back. 2 Kings 14 says he would expand his power and his domain and his boundaries. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing. Goading Democrats, Trump flaunted Vogt's role in Project 2025. The hard right blueprint for expanding executive power, that Trump disavowed on the campaign trail after it became a political liability. So now he's there, he's in his first year, and he's expanding his reach. For Vote, the shutdown offers a unique opening, a live test of theories that he has spent years refining on how to weaken Congress, purge the bureaucracy, and concentrate power in the presidency. This is their opportunity. And judging by the amount of ridicule aimed at the radical leftist Democrats, you get the sense that they feel like they're in a pretty strong position here. But the radical leftist base, they're so deranged because of their hatred of Donald Trump that they want their leaders, Hakeem Jeffries, Schumer, they want their leaders to just do anything to fight Trump. And they don't realize that they're just setting Trump up for a power grab. This is clip 10.
Day three of the federal government shutdown. After a key meeting between President Trump and the architect of his plans to shrink the federal government, Russ Vought. Trump yesterday, writing Vought, would now recommend which, quote, Democrat agencies to cut. Adding, quote, I can't believe the radical left Democrats gave me this unprecedented opportunity.
Well, there could be firings, and that's their fault. And it could also be other things. I mean, we could cut projects that they wanted.
As for those possible layoffs, the numbers could be staggering.
Look, it's likely going to be in the thousands.
The two sides still very much stuck in their positions with no signs of a breakthrough.
But here's what the Democrats are completely missing in this shutdown. This is an unprecedented opportunity they are giving to President Donald J. Trump and the OMB director, Russ Vought, to cut waste and make irreversible changes to the bloated federal workforce through layoffs. You might want to call it Doge 2.0, if you will. Even the Washington Post picked up what we had pointed out from the beginning, their editorial board warning Democrats that they may have just been led blindly by their far-left flank into a trap set by Donald Trump. The administration, they now have the power, the opportunity to clean up the bureaucratic nightmare that Washington has become and that is bankrupting our country. And by the way, it may be irreversible. This is an unprecedented chance. It's time to use the moment to cut back the size, the scope, the influence of our bloated bureaucracy.
It's hard to believe just 4 years ago or 4.5 years ago that President Trump was silenced. He had no voice. He was a political pariah. Nobody wanted to talk to him. Nobody wanted to talk about him coming back except us, except America Under Attack. And now look at the position he's in today. The man was nearly assassinated a year ago on his golf course in Palm Beach. And a few months before that in Butler, Pennsylvania. And now he's back. He's back with a vengeance every day. Just a flurry of activity there in the Oval Office, in the White House. Axios gives us the big picture. All these monumental changes, cutbacks in the military, an unprecedented partisan address this week. Trump told more than 800 generals and admirals to prepare for a war against domestic enemies. Academia. The administration's asking universities to sign a 10-point compact that would grant preferential access to federal funding if schools agree to freeze tuition, protect conservative speech, apply strict definitions to gender, limit international students, and other Trump priorities. Now he's using the power of the purse. We'll give you some funding, but you got to do this, 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 and this. Rule of law. Days after Trump publicly pressured Attorney General Pam Bondi to charge his political enemies, the Justice Department indicted former FBI Director James Comey. Other Trump foes, including New York Attorney General Letitia James and Adam Schiff, are under investigation. Civil society. FBI Director Kash Patel severed ties with the Anti-Defamation League on Thursday, accusing the Jewish civil rights group of functioning like a terrorist organization after MAGA activists discovered that Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA was listed in its non-removed glossary of extremism and hate. It goes on. The corporate world. Trump demanded last week that Microsoft fire its head of global affairs, Lisa Monaco, because she served in the Biden administration. A reminder that even corporate giants aren't immune from political retaliation. I mean, these are king-like powers. Now, it's not going to correct all the wrongs. It's going to actually lead to some some trouble for God's family, in fact. Amos 7 tells us this. But they are, nevertheless, king-like powers. He's expanding his territory. The borders. In America Under Attack, writing about the history of Jeroboam, the nation experienced a period of relative strength, stability, and even prosperity. It's talking about a resurgence. And of course, in the prophetic sense, this is what we're living through. This is what we're seeing. We're witnessing this. He quotes Amos 7, verses 12 and 13. And then my father says, here is a king with a chapel and a court. He's in charge with kingly authority. Everything seems to be going well for him. God's going to give him the power to save Israel until this message of warning is finished. He's actually doing this for the sake of his work. God is. God gave him this power because God wants this warning to go out. God wants for you to read the United States and Britain in prophecy. Put this together with my father's latest booklet, The Key of David. What a 1-2 punch. You can get the vision, the Key of David vision, firmly implanted in your mind, which is where it should be. It's a glorious vision. And it comes with a sobering warning. You'll see that in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. God has to intervene in the end to just protect his people, his family, his church. Because it's the only platform out there that's bringing the truth, backed by courage and boldness. We haven't confronted our many sins. Even though there's a resurgence, the sins, I mean, they're spreading. This report, by the way, maybe this is a good time to get over to the report on how destructive and dangerous marijuana is. And you would think this would be common sense, but not so in America and in Britain. I mean, besides the crime and the violence, you just have this addiction to mind-altering drugs, and that just opens the mind up further to the devil's influence. Listen to clip 17.
Knowing what we know now about the link in a certain percentage of especially young men between weed use and violent psychosis and other mental illness, why would we encourage this at any level in our society?
We shouldn't. I consider cannabis to be the most dangerous drug in America right now, by the way, and I'm not trying to slide opioids here, but consider that SAMHSA, the Agency on Drug Abuse, which reported 7.6 million people going to ERs last year from drugs, puts now cannabis ahead of opioids, 12% cannabis, 11% opioids. And that's because of what you just said, because people have underlying mental health disorders and they don't even know it. They're suffering from anxiety, depression, maybe a small percentage schizophrenia. The first episode of psychosis that you have is accelerated, unfortunately, if you're a regular pot user or cannabis user. And again, the anxiety disorder can come out from excess cannabis use. And all of that is getting worse and worse. And then the gummies are sitting around and kids end up taking them. And over 20,000 calls to drug abuse hotlines last year, 80% kids. Why would anybody want that? Because they don't realize how bad this is. And cannabis also affects your heart. And cannabis also interrupts your sleep. And cannabis has not been proven to have absolute medical indication. So it's about education, and that's what we're doing here.
Yeah, CBD is being embraced by the Trump administration. clearly. Explain the connection between CBD, which is used by people whose claim it helps them sleep, it helps them joint pain and so forth, with marijuana itself, and why seniors would it be recommended for seniors?
It's not recommended by me, and the president, who I agree with most of the time, does not necessarily have the whole story here. There was a national drug abuse survey that showed, Laura, that over 60% of the people who use CBD, and I'll get to what that is in a minute, also use cannabis. And over 60% of the people who use cannabis also use CBD. They come from the same plant. And because of the Farm Act in 2018, you can use hemp products, which are cannabis, which are CBD, and those can come in gummies. But the problem is that may help you sleep a little bit if you're a senior. But then you say, well, but it's not helping me enough. Let me go to a cannabis gummy. And the cannabis gummies are now 30 to 50% THC, the active psychoactive chemical in them. So then you wake up in the middle of the night and you're anxious and you don't know why, because you thought this was helping you sleep. The real tragedy here is the marijuana that I grew up with, marijuana in our society, is now a different drug. It is not 1.5% THC like the way it was in the 70s and 80s. It's now 30%. And we don't want our kids anywhere near this, Laura. I know you don't want your kids near this, and I don't want mine.
It's crazy to think about how mainstream this is. It's everywhere. I mean, we come in contact with Oklahomans that say cannabis is ruining our state. But as you heard there, government officials are behind this because, well, it's generating tax revenue, the almighty dollar. If we get sicker and sicker as a nation, no problem, so long as we can make a deal, so long as we can collect some tax revenue. There's probably three or four cannabis shops within about a mile or a mile and a half of this campus, this beautiful campus that you see behind me. It's spreading. You heard the guy say right there, it's worse and worse. It's getting worse and worse. The potency of the drug, compare it to the 1970s or 80s, anything. The widespread availability. It's more potent. It's a gateway drug. It's altering the minds of Americans. And the same thing's happening in Britain. Mr. Armstrong said the evils. He talked about the paradox of our time. The fact that we've got all of this sophisticated technology and advancement at the same time that there's appalling evils everywhere. The evils are appalling in a Western world of awesome progress and advancement. He said in 1984, my father said this in 2021. Everywhere today we see lawlessness. That's the real cause of the problems we face. America is plagued by sin. Pornography, homosexuality, abortion, drugs, violence. We are steeped in sin and lawlessness. He said it abounds just as Christ prophesied it would. At a time like this, we ought to look at our sins. Yes, indeed. At a time like this, we ought to consider our ways. And at a time like this, we also should envision the future, because it's not going to stay like this for much longer. God's government is about to be firmly established on this earth, headquartered in Jerusalem. No more cannabis shops. No more crime in the streets, no more homelessness, no more satanic, demented, deranged thinking, no more political warfare, no more lawfare, no more crime and violence, peace and prosperity and law-keeping is coming for everyone on earth. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Sorry for no World Watch this week. We've got a lot of people in transit, so next time, mate.